It had been a serious mistake to plan this op on the Vergultung. Now he, too, had placed himself at their mercy. Chapter 71. Pendergast ascended the side of the yacht, clinging like a limpet to the exterior of the upper deck, using the drip edges of the windows as tow and handholds. He reached the lower edge of the bridge windows. While the windows of the staterooms were smoked, making it impossible to see inside, the bridge windows were clear. As he peered over the edge, in the dim light from the electronics, he could make out the personnel on the bridge. A captain and an armed mate, who was doubling as navigator. Beyond, in the sky lounge behind the bridge, was the single guard with an automatic weapon pacing back and forth. Occasionally, he would come out onto the sky deck behind the lounge, make a circuit, and go back in. Outside the sky lounge, the sky deck was empty, except for an empty, uncovered hot tub and some banquettes. The bridge itself was locked and barred. A yacht like this would have high security as a matter of course. The windows would be shatterproof and, judging from their thickness, possibly even bulletproof. There was no way in for him, none. Pendergast crept along the slanting wall until he was just below the level of the tow rail, where sliding glass doors opened from the sky lounge to the open sky deck. He reached into his pocket, took out a coin, and tossed it so that it clanked against the glass doors. The man inside the sky lounge froze, then fell into a crouch. "Nast here," came the guard's whispered voice over the radio. "I heard something."
"Where?"
"Here, on the sky deck."
"Check it out," was the response.
"Carefully. Baumann, Eberstark, prepare to cover him."
Pendergast saw the dim outline of the man, crouching behind the glass doors, peer out. When the man was satisfied the deck was clear, he rose, slid open the door, and stepped out warily, weapon at the ready. Pendergast lowered his head below the edge of the deck, and speaking into his own stolen headset in a hoarse, indistinguishable whisper, said,
"Nast, port side, over the railing. Check it out."
He waited. After a moment, the dark silhouette of the man's head appeared over the railing directly above him, looking down. Pendergast shot him in the face. With a gargled cry, the man's head snapped back, then the body slumped forward, Pendergast helping catapult it over the railing. It struck the main deck rail and became hung up on it, sprawled partially onto the walkway. Grasping a post, Pendergast vaulted up onto the sky deck as a burst of chatter sounded over the radio. Leaping into the empty hot tub, he crouched low. He knew two more men were on their way to the sky deck. Excellent. They came thundering out onto the deck almost immediately, one aft and one forward. Pendergast waited for the right alignment, then leapt out of the hot tub with a single shot to startle them. The two men, as expected, let loose with automatic weapons, and one of them fell, killed by his partner's crossfire. The other threw himself to the ground, firing wildly and ineffectively. Pendergast disabled the man with a single shot, then leapt over the sky deck rail, dropping down to the main deck walkway below. Nast's dead body afforded an agreeably soft landing. He then vaulted over the main deck rail, grasping hold of two uprights to prevent himself from dropping into the sea. For a moment his legs dangled over the water, the hull sloping gently away underneath him. With a quick effort, he found a purchase with his feet on a lower porthole drip edge. There he waited, clinging to the hull, below the level of the main deck, listening. Again, the radio told him what he needed to know. Chapter 72. Down in the engine room, Esterhazy paced, aware of a growing sense of confusion and panic which mirrored his own internal turmoil. How the hell was Pendergast doing it? It was as if he were reading their minds. And then, suddenly he knew. Of course, it was so simple, and it gave him an idea. He spoke for the first time into his own radio headset. "Esterhazy here. Bring the girl to the foredeck. You hear me? Bring her there quickly. We need to get rid of her. She's only an impediment to us now." He shut off the headset and signaled Faulkner with a shake of his head not to use his own.
"What the hell are you doing?" Faulkner whispered harshly. "Who are you talking to? You can't get rid of her. We'll lose all leverage."
Esterhazy interrupted him with another gesture.
"He's got a radio. That's how he's doing it. The son of a bitch has a radio."
Immediately, comprehension bloomed over Faulkner's face.
"You and I will go topside. We'll surprise him when he comes to the bow to rescue her. Hurry, we'll collect what men we can."
They left the engine room and, weapons drawn, bounded up the stairway, then through the galley, and out the hatch at the far end. There, Schultz was waiting, gun drawn.
"There's been gunfire on the sky deck,"
Schultz began. Falconer silenced him with a curt movement.
"Come with us," he whispered.
The three of them moved swiftly and silently to the foredeck, then crouched behind the life-saving containers. Not a minute later, a black-suited figure scurried up and over the rail on the starboard side, moving swiftly as a bat, then flattened itself behind the forward cabin wall. Schultz took aim.
"Let him get close," whispered Faulkner. "Wait for a sure thing."
But nothing happened. Pendergast remained behind the cabin wall.
"He's on to us," muttered Faulkner.
"No," said Esterhazy. "Wait."
Minutes passed, and suddenly the figure came out of hiding, flitting along the foredeck at high speed. Schultz let loose with a burst of fire, raking the fore cabin wall, and the figure dove behind a forward davit, using the low steel bracing as cover. The game was up. Falconer fired, the rounds ricocheting off the steel with a loud clanging, sending off showers of sparks.
"We've got him pinned," Falconer said, firing again. "He can't get out from behind there. Careful what you shoot."
An answering shot came from behind the davits, and they instinctively ducked. In that momentary distraction, the black figure sprang out from behind its cover and literally flew through the air, sailing over the railing in a head-first dive, vanishing over the side. All three fired, but it was already too late. Falconer and Schultz rose, raced to the side of the boat, firing down into the water, but the figure had vanished.
"He's finished," said Schultz. "At this water temperature, he'll be dead in 15 minutes. "Don't be so damned sure," said Esterhazy, coming up beside them and looking aft.
The dark waters spread out, heaving and cold, the dim wake receding into nothingness.
"He's going to get back on the boat, using the stern swim rail."
Falconer stared back, and for the first time a crack appeared in his preternatural cool, beads of sweat popping up on his brow despite the frigid